just remember that, you know, your reputation will always trump your brand. I know that's a weird way of answering that question, but I think it's ingrained in a lot of our discussion thus far, which is, look, there's a lot of really, really smart people in this industry, but at its core, you're only as good as your last few investments. On paper, from a pure like dollar return basis, whether it's a cash on cash return, IRR, however you and your fund and your LPs measure you, you're really only as good as your last five investments and the realized gains. However, the thing that doesn't change over that time is your reputation.
Hello and welcome back to the Arena Podcast by Kauffman Fellows, where we dive deep into the stories of some of the most fabled names in VC. I'm your producer, Nihar Nilakanti, and this podcast is hosted by Jeff Harbach, CEO of Kauffman Fellows. Joining us in today's episode is Elliot Robinson, partner at Bessemer Venture Partners and a Kauffman Fellow from Class 22. We can't wait to share his story with you, so let's get right to it.
All right, welcome back to the Kauffman Fellows podcast. You're in the arena, this time with Elliot Robinson from Bessemer Venture Partners. We are pumped to have Elliot with us today. A little bio on Elliot. Elliot is currently at Bessemer Venture Partners, focusing on growth equity. Prior to Bessemer, Elliot was a partner at M12, Microsoft Ventures in the Bay. Previously, he was the vice president with Georgian Partners in Toronto, where he led growth equity investments in cybersecurity, marketing automation, healthcare IT, ed tech, analytics, and AI companies. Elliot holds an MBA from Columbia Business School, where he was an Insight Venture Fellow and a Robert Twigo Private Equity Fellow. He holds a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics from Morehouse College. Elliot sits on the board of Black VC, and Elliot is a Kauffman Fellow from Class 22. Elliot, welcome to the arena.
Thank you guys for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Elliot, I'm excited to talk to you about your journey through venture and journey through life. Why don't we start off with telling us a little bit about your time here at Bessemer. You're brand new there. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing there.
Yeah, so I'm about 3 months in here to Bessemer, where I'm leading our new platform called Century Capital, which is all about investing in the biggest market-leading companies and entrepreneurs across enterprise SaaS to start, cloud computing, and then over time, we'll probably branch into some of the leading areas in consumer technology where Bessemer is operating from a position of strength. Most closely, I work with Byron Dieter, who's been a career mentor of mine, and I'm very happy to call him a friend. And we're in the early stages of building out our team. So right now, it's myself and Mary D'Onofrio, who's also dedicated to the Century Capital Growth Equity Investing platform. And we're about six investments in. We do a mix of, you know, doubling down in some of Bessemer's best portfolio companies, but we also are looking at net new opportunities where, you know, we're finding those entrepreneurs that are right in that inflection point of, you know, they've raised probably a Series A, Series B, sometimes a Series C, and they're really moving into scaling that go-to-market machine where Century Capital can come in and take them to that next level of success. And then kind of that 3 to 5 year march towards a big IPO or strategic exit.
That's awesome. And, you know, joining a new team, it's always a challenge to kind of bring cultures together, to create a new culture when new team members join a team. How has that been for you at Bessemer? They have such a storied history and they're really strong firm and bringing you in. Tell me about some of the things that maybe have pleasantly surprised you in joining the team there.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to answer that question in a unique way. So you had mentioned in my bio starting with Syncom Venture Partners in DC. And when I joined Syncom back in 2006, that fund had been around 34 years before I joined, and it had been in existence for a total of 40 years by the time that I transitioned into Georgian. And what I love most about that firm is it's what I would call old school venture capital, in the sense that we were always doing things a certain way. We had been around for a really, really long time. And at its core, it was really built on a foundation and set of principles about you know, always helping and pushing the entrepreneur and the management team first. One of the things that I've really struggled with over the last five, maybe call it 10 years of my career, has really been the rise of the venture capitalist as a personality. Even for me, doing this podcast is a little bit out of scope from things that I would typically do. But given it's tied to Kaufman, you know, I have a lot of comfortability and I know it's coming from the right place. But what I love most about Bessemer's culture is it reminds me of where I started my venture career. So it feels a bit full circle, where Bessemer is always about helping and promoting our entrepreneurs and our management teams and putting the companies first. And really, you know, while we, you know, we have some very prolific investors, some of the best in the space, you know, Midas List investors, at its core, it's always about the entrepreneur, and we promote the fund more than we promote individuals, which I really like. So as a newer member coming into the team, what I've really enjoyed is they spend a lot of time getting to know the folks that I've worked with, the boards that I've worked with, entrepreneurs that I've supported and been very lucky to work with in my career before joining here. And, you know, 3 months in, that's really the focus. How do we find entrepreneurs that are doing something extremely unique in their space, have built a company that we know is going to endure for the next century plus? And how do we make sure that we're solely focused on supporting that company achieving its next level of success, and then kind of sitting in the background and letting other people talk about all the great work that we do and not over indexing on talking about ourselves, which I love.
Bessemer is an awesome firm, and they became just a little bit more awesome with adding you to the team. They're lucky to have you, Elliot. Let's talk about your beginnings. I'd love to go back. You have such an interesting background. Why don't we start with your family structure and kind of where you were born? Tell us a little bit about where you came from, Elliot.
Yeah, so my family roots really start in a mix between Virginia and the Carolinas. I was born in Arlington Hospital, which is Northern Virginia, but my family is really a mix of Richmond, Virginia, where my mom's side is from, and then Raleigh, North Carolina, where my dad's side is from. And growing up, you know, while I could bore you with a bunch of stories about being a young kid growing up in Northern Virginia, what's most relevant to a conversation like this is I am the son of a software or enterprise software entrepreneur. My father had a company in Reston, Virginia called Genesis Systems. The interesting story there was both of my parents met at Vanderbilt. They actually integrated the school. So education has always been something that's been really, really important to me. And, you know, most of my godparents come from that Vanderbilt kind of cohort where, you know, integrated the school, dealt with all types of structural challenges, legal challenges in terms of, you know, gaining their education and being successful there. And then my father, who got his math degree from Vanderbilt, was working as an engineer at Westinghouse, actually in Maryland. And then he and two of his coworkers saw a really unique opportunity inside of Westinghouse, but whether it be kind of corporate politics, maybe even some social politics at the time, they couldn't get the support internally at Westinghouse to pursue what they saw as a total greenfield market opportunity for the company. And after 2 years of fighting to get support for it, they spun out and did it themselves. And that was the start of Genesis Systems. So I tell all that story to say, you know, in middle school, and I guess the later stages of elementary school for me, it was go to school, play a sport afterwards, or do some extracurricular activity. And then I went to my dad's startup. That's where I learned how to build computers. I could program in DOS, for those of you listening who remember programming in DOS. And at a very early age, I fell in love with really old computer games like King's Quest or Wing Commander. And I remember, you know, my dad and his two co-founders sitting in this one conference room doing nothing but math all night, because it was modeling enterprise computer systems and trying to help clients figure out if a government RFP that was set out, whether Cisco was the right person to go with versus Westinghouse versus you name it, big computer company. Who had submitted RFPs. And typically, they had internal government employees that were trying to figure out who to go with. Unfortunately, most of those decisions were driven over who bought the nicest dinner or the nicest wine. And my dad's company was all about how do you take that out of the system and really make it mathematical and quantitative in terms of the decision that you arrived at. So, you know, my entire life and even through my time at Morehouse, I majored in math at Morehouse because my dad majored in math at Vanderbilt. My whole dream was to be him all over again, which was to be a software entrepreneur. You know, those things didn't necessarily play out that way. I still thought leaving Morehouse, I was supposed to go to Virginia Tech for graduate school and start my own company there. And I got a venture internship at Syncom Venture Partners in DC, which turned into a one-year deferment after closing two deals, which turned into 5 years later going to Columbia Business School. And my venture career lands me where I am now, really excited at Bessemer. So again, growing up in Northern Virginia, it was a mix of really traditional kind of Southern values layered with education at its core, and then getting a real appreciation for how hard it is to be an entrepreneur through the lens of watching my dad grow and ultimately sell a business.
Your father sounds like an incredible man, and certainly with an incredible story and a great entrepreneur. What were some of the things, let's unpack that a little bit. What are some of the things that you learned from him? Is there anything that you particularly like, a story or an instance, something that taught you, that he taught you, that still stays with you today?
Yeah. So the story that I think about most, he had a group of investors. It was a mix of some high net worth folks from his Vanderbilt kind of alum board network, as well as some tech entrepreneurs who had invested in his company, as well as, I wouldn't necessarily call them venture funds as much as angel funds. And in the Washington, D.C. area, we had what's called Beltway entrepreneurs. So you build a private company, and the Beltway side of the terminology means you're selling into government, and then much of the time you use that revenue to sell kind of the private side of the business. And, you know, tied to my venture career, the stories I used to always appreciate from my dad were telling me about how to be a good advisor or investor in a company. And he always used to tell me about two different kinds of investor. He had one that would show up to a board meeting, and they would be scrambling to find the board deck. They would flip through it really quickly and then basically spend kind of the next 2 to 3 hours telling him and his co-founders and management team how to run the business. And then he had this other type of investor, which he always told me to be, which was the kind that came in, didn't need the board deck, and had two or three things on his or her mind that really mattered, right? And his view was, once a quarter, you get a bunch of really smart people together. No one's looking at, I guess it wasn't necessarily email back then, but no one's thinking about kind of the short-term tactical things, and hopefully you're thinking strategically. And if you're an investor that was talking to my dad and his co-founders and management team on a weekly basis, helping them build the business, then you didn't have to focus on whatever kind of slides or documents were put out for the board meeting. You knew what was going on. And when I started in my venture career, he said, you be that, you know, type two investor that doesn't need the board deck because you're supporting your entrepreneurs, you're working with your CEOs and C-level management on a day-to-day weekly basis. Never be the investor that runs into a board meeting and is scrambling looking for the docs, because everyone can read. That's what he used to always tell me. Everyone can read. Be strategic and really leverage the idea that you're getting a bunch of really smart people together that know not only that business, but have the perspective of a bunch of businesses that they've advised, are currently advising, and they have a market perspective. And that's really the value that you bring to bear at the board level and to the CEO. So those are the stories that I really, at the time, I didn't fully understand, but even in month one of my venture career back in 2006, I applied a lot. And then lastly, around most of the tough decisions I've had to make on management, whether it's a CEO, founder, a sales leader, a CFO, you name it. In my first 5 years of my venture career, I typically called my dad before every one of those big decisions. And I talked to him. I said, hey, not only should I be doing this, but how should I be doing this? What else should I be thinking about? Because unfortunately, many times venture investors forget that there's people on the other side, and there's families involved, and there's kids involved. And, you know, having seen my dad deal with those tough decisions he had to make on management and scaling, and sometimes, you know, downsizing areas of his company, I had a really acute firsthand experience and perspective on the personal side of that. And that's something I try to bring to my career every day.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that, Elliot. Your mother was also a mathematician and impressive in her, and certainly in her area as well. Tell us some of the things that you learned from your mother. Any one or two things that stick out to you?
Yeah. So, you know, my mother, there's a whole different way I could go about this. If there's one takeaway, you know, she saw me start at 20 years old in the venture business, and things were going really well early on. And I'll stray away from anything academic or kind of tactical in terms of her advice. But every time that things were going really well, or an investment was trending in the right direction, or, you know, knock on wood, every time I had a good exit, she would say, "Hey, remember many of the values and some of the religious kind of foundation that we put in you." And this is not to take this conversation into religion or anything like that. It's more of a value set. And she used to always say, "Hey, remember that teaching from when you're growing up that says, you know, for he who exalts himself, he'll be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." And that's something that, you know, I've had written on every office throughout my career. It's something that I keep folded in my wallet. I have printouts of this saying everywhere in my life, my backpack, my suitcase. And it's really interesting, because in venture, when you're hot, you're really hot. And when you're running that hot, you will be humbled. Whether it's, you know, a company will have a failing, you'll have a personal failing inside of your fund. It was always a reminder for me that no matter how well things were going or how well I thought things were going, to stay humbled. And really, you know, it ties back to my first comment about the rise of the venture capitalists. And she was really at the foundation of my perspective around that. And while I could go into things about kind of the interpersonal side of this business, or even, you know, she had a keen understanding of economics, it was really that grounding and how to bring the right energy to the companies you're working with, and even your own partnership, that probably sticks out the most in my mind.
Elliot, your Twitter handle is the Values VC. I'm guessing it's some of this came from your mother, and some of the reason correct. Why you picked that handle. Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I mean, look, I'm from Virginia, and my family's from the Carolinas, so I find that there's a dignity and simplicity from folks that come from that part of the country. And, you know, the value set that I try to live in my personal life, and just as importantly, in my professional life, means a lot to me. And, you know, you hit a certain point in your venture career where the best CEOs and co-founders and companies and even boards, they have options, right? And at the end of the day, the question is, when they start making phone calls about Elliot Robinson, the investor, what I really would like the CEOs to talk about is my value set. Because you can't control a lot of the things that happen with your companies. You're going to have, you know, whether it's illness, whether it's macroeconomic changes, whether it's, you know, new entrants and competition into the space, there's so much that you can't control. But the values by which you make decisions, the values by which you treat people, and the energy that you bring into an investment and a board, that's something you can control. And my view as someone from Virginia, my dad used to always say, "Hey, like, if we have a alignment on our values, then we can keep the small things small. And then, you know, that leaves a lot more time and resources to deal with the big things, the big strategic questions we got to answer in life, and I guess in the venture business, around the private company that you're trying to scale." So for me, you know, I try to be pretty forward leaning in the values that matter to me. So when I'm dealing with a CEO or a set of co-founders, a management team or the board, they know pretty much before the decision comes from me, or my opinion, they kind of know where it's coming from. And I think that, you know, reduces the noise, and again, allows us to focus on the big ticket items that matter. So the more and more I stay true to myself around my value set, it's the one thing that I can control in this business. And as I already mentioned, there's a bunch of variables that you can't control. So the values thing for me is not only, you know, the reputation that I try to hold and maintain. It's not about branding. It's about other people speaking about my values, not me. That's why I never talk about those values publicly on Twitter, but it's certainly something that I try to keep core to how I operate in this business.
Now, your mother and father went to Vanderbilt. You were thinking about maybe Vanderbilt, maybe Virginia Tech, ended up going to Morehouse College. Tell us about that decision.
Yeah, so the short answer on the Vanderbilt side is my entire life I thought I was going to go there until, I don't know, maybe my sophomore or junior year in high school. We went to go visit. My parents went back all the time for different events, and sometimes they would speak. I remember seeing pictures of my parents up on walls, and I said, oh, no, this is probably not the right fit. I want to go to college, do well in school, maybe join a fraternity, but I cannot live up to pictures of my parents with Martin Luther King and Stokely Carmichael, and that just, wow. There's no way you could live up to that. And Vanderbilt is such a special school and holds a special place in my family's heart. And even some of my best friends ended up going, influenced by my parents' time there. It just wasn't the right fit for me. However, I ended up visiting Morehouse College through a recommendation of one of my cousins who went, and I just realized it was the right fit. I care a lot about, diversity in technology. And at the time, I still had this idea of starting my own company. I said, man, what better place to find my set of co-founders than at a place like Morehouse College? And Morehouse is really all about, understanding who you are as an African-American, particularly African-American male in today's society. And that changes over time. When I looked at some of the folks that had graduated from the school, I said, man, what better place to spend 4 years? And I could go back to Virginia Tech or maybe even Vanderbilt for a graduate degree in engineering and computer science and then figure it out from there. I did end up joining that fraternity and did many of the leadership things that I wanted to do. But the biggest kind of outcome for me there was my senior research was in neural networks applied to the stock market. And this was back in like 2004, 2005. So we were setting back propagation algorithms on Sun servers that, like, this is before cloud computing. So we would set the algorithms at night and you would sleep through the night and people would, it's going to sound kind of nerdy, but people would run into the lab the next morning and see kind of the output and where we benchmarked against the O'Higgins method of stock investing, which was the kind of in vogue benchmark that we were using. And any day that we would beat his historical, returns and his projected returns given his method, we'd be super excited. And that research paper, I got a lot of attention for it, a departmental award for it. And that's kind of how I knew that maybe this investing thing might be something I want to look at as well. And I've used a lot of that. It's kind of funny now with the rise of machine learning and algorithms, it's nice to have that. Before there was cloud computing and all this software around it, we were doing it by hand and setting those models on Sun servers. So it's kind of full circle. I didn't go to Morehouse thinking I'd be doing backpropagation algorithms on servers, but fast forward 15 years to my venture career where that's all the rage. It's nice to be able to talk to entrepreneurs about doing that myself and connect with them.
I love that. We talk a lot about having your own zone of genius, something that you're passionate about and that you have a long history in doing, and you certainly have that. And that's influenced some of the great entrepreneurs that you've been able to work with and investment decisions that you've made. Elliot, tell us about your family. Means a lot to you, and your family plays an important role in your life. What were some of the hard struggles that you went through, either you personally or through family, that make you kind of who you are today?
Yeah, sure. So the irony of today's podcast is it marks the 10-year anniversary of my mom's passing. And she was very much the backbone of my family. And unfortunately, after my mom's passing, I had some really tough times with my family, particularly with some challenges that my brother was going through as a result of her passing. They were extremely, extremely close. And my brother just faced a couple of hardships. My mom looked at her cancer diagnosis as a blessing and always asked me to try to find the silver lining in all of that. The silver lining in that hardship are a couple of things. One, it brought me and my dad much closer. And way, way bigger than that, it brought my brother and I much, much closer. I realized that the support system that my mother was for my brother, who's way smarter than me, way more creative than I am, it really allowed me to realize, man, I can step in, provide a little bit more of that extra support and maybe get even closer to him. So fast forward 10 years from my mom's passing, I got married 2 weeks ago, and having my dad and my brother there and holding a picture of my mom, that really was like the best part. Of course, my beautiful wife, Melissa, is the highlight of that day. But speaking just on the family side, you know, 10 years from that day, seeing my family back intact and the new relationships I have with them was really, really special. So one, I appreciate you asking that question. You know, it's one of the tougher things to talk about, but, you know, it definitely, when I'm thinking about, you know, some of the hardships I have, I don't even know if I could call them hardships in my professional career, juxtaposed against that 10-year cycle and what I've seen, I realize that most of the stuff I deal with on the venture side is way easier than that. And it keeps things in perspective. And I'm really happy that I went through that personally and that my family went through that. And I think it also allows me to be, you know, a little more compassionate and maybe apply some more empathy to the entrepreneurs that I work with. Funny enough, I started my day today, my second meeting with one of our portfolio company CEOs who lost his dad 2 weeks ago. And he remembered a dinner that he and I had 2 months ago where I mentioned losing my mom and my dad's facing some new healthcare challenges. And that's actually what we talked about for about half of the time. So when you really step away from this business, it's just a reminder that there's people involved. It's not just board decks. It's not just, you know, revenue growth and burn and all the things that people blog about. There's like a personal side to this. And, you know, I was texting Byron earlier today. I said, hey, man, thanks so much for introducing me to him. Because I realized about halfway through the conversation, I think it was more of a therapy session in the auspices of what's going on with his business. It was more so, hey, man, I remember you sharing some of the challenges of navigating your career with some family loss. You don't know this, but 2 weeks ago, I lost a parent and we talked about that for probably 20 minutes. So, look, I'm not the smartest person in venture, but if I can help, you know, share some perspective of overcoming some interpersonal challenges and family challenges, then I feel really good about it.
Thank you for sharing your perspective on those last 10 years and that kind of the journey that you've been through. And my gosh, how inspiring your mom is to look at her cancer as a blessing and to encourage you and your family to look for the silver linings. You know, I have to imagine, Elliot, that was certainly difficult to deal with her passing and her going through those struggles. And I have to imagine that you didn't right away see the silver lining in this. It took time to, as you said, become closer to your father, become closer to your brother. I'm sure you were already close, but it made you even closer, as you said. What would you say if you were able to go back to 10 years ago, Elliot, and look him in the face and be able to give him some advice or say something to him, maybe thank him for the son and the brother that he was? Is there anything that you would say to him now, knowing what you have gone through over this last 10 years and the kind of the progression and the growth that you've gone through? What would you say to that 10 year ago, Elliot?
Yeah, I the biggest advice I would give to that 10 year ago, Elliot, and it's actually a lot of the advice I give to folks of mine that I mentor that are earlier in their venture careers, just remember that, you know, your reputation will always trump your brand. I know that's a weird way of answering that question, but I think it's ingrained in a lot of our discussion thus far, which is, look, there's a lot of really, really smart people in this industry, but at its core, you're only as good as your last few investments on paper from a pure like dollar return basis, whether it's a cash on cash return, IRR, however you and your fund and your LPs measure you, you're really only as good as your last five investments and the realized gains. However, the thing that doesn't change over that time is your reputation. And when I was 10 years ago, Elliot, or, you know, analyst associate level Elliot in the venture space, you know, venture does a really good job of picking high performing people that are used to having this like pattern of success in their professional or educational lives. And like, this venture thing comes and venture growth thing comes with a lot of failure, and you can find a lot of success and silver linings in those failures as well. But at its core, man, like the way that I've been able to survive and succeed in this industry is building a reputation around one, being a good person to work with, I think, being extremely helpful when it comes to guiding entrepreneurs through the rough patches, both in their personal life and with their company. And, you know, at its core, just being a team player, man. Like, you can also fall into the trap of it's all about you inside of your fund when, you know, everyone here at Bessemer or M12 or Georgian or Syncom, my guiding principle is always do what's best for the fund. And, you know, if I could give that 10-year-old Elliot some advice when I was, you know, 23-ish, I thought about a lot of doing what's best for Elliot's career and didn't always optimize of doing what's best for the fund. And then if the fund succeeds, Elliot succeeds. So that's definitely the advice I would give to myself 10 years ago.
Elliot, so you're on the board of Black VC. Tell us about what brought you to participating in that organization, helping to grow that organization. Tell us about why that's so important to you.
Yeah, so, you know, what's really interesting is if you think about our industry and where the dollars come from, a really, really large portion for venture, growth equity, LBO, hedge fund, you call it, alternative asset class, comes from pension funds. And when you look at the makeup of, if you just take like a CalPERS, CalSTRS, a lot of those dollars are generated by people that kind of look like me. But then less than 0.1% of those dollars allocated to alternative asset class investors are then put in the hands of the people that look like the folks that created the dollars in the first place. So there's a big kind of like wealth creation story that's missed. Like the whole diversity story around venture capital, it's getting better, it's being talked about. But it, for me, it's more of a wealth creation story. And then if you're generating wealth and putting capital in the hands of people that look like the folks that generate the dollars in the first place, they're much more likely to invest in a more diverse portfolio. And then that generates wealth in the communities that you really care about. And hopefully it's a self-fulfilling cycle outside of just funding the pension and the pensioners that need it. So when, you know, the idea of how do we increase the number of African-American investors in venture capital and growth equity came about, it was really spawned by Sydney Sykes, who was at NEA, and then Fred Gross, who was at Storm Ventures. And they came to me and said, hey, you know, we're trying to, you know, not just double, but, you know, maybe quadruple the number of investors who are African-American in the space. What's funny for me in year 13, entering 14 of my career, when I started in 2006, it was literally one email list. I think it was like 17 of us that all knew each other. And now that list is well north of kind of 250. And that could be, you know, high net worth, family office, hedge fund, institutional fund. There's been a big uptick on the institutional side, a lot of that growth being driven by folks like yourself at Kauffman Fellows, which I'm super excited to be a part of. And what we saw was, hey, if we took a long view approach of 5 or 10 years and said, hey, we have a goal of getting, I think the first number we threw up on the wall was 1,000 Black venture capitalists. And you define that for what it means. It could be the seed folks, hedge fund folks. What does it take to do that? And it's a mix of education. It's a mix of just exposing people to what venture capital is. It's a mix of putting African-American venture capitalists together with African-American entrepreneurs. These two communities haven't necessarily, you know, worked together as closely as we'd like. And it's been one of the real joys of my career supporting Fred and Sydney's vision as a founding board member with Black VC. And even seeing where it's come, there's, you know, Micah Sim at M25 Ventures, who's going to be in the next class of Kauffman Fellows. He's now our Black VC board rep in Chicago. And I'm like very pleased and excited not only to be his Kauffman mentor, but he's a friend of mine. So to see the network building outside of just Silicon Valley into New York, into Toronto, into Chicago, into LA, is something that hopefully 10 years from now, I can look back on and say, hey, I was part of the beginning of that. And it's really helping to fuel more diversity into the venture capital scene where funds are calling us and emailing us saying, hey, we're trying to find, you know, a new diverse investor to where do we start? And then I can say, well, I've got a resume list of 100 African-American venture investors and ex-entrepreneurs and operators that you just don't know because they don't come from your network. And we've been able to help those funds match and find new candidates. And it's been amazing.
Such an important work that Fred and Sydney and you and others have been a part of and really pushing forward in this industry. Diversity in tech is so important to venture as well. So thank you for your efforts there. Elliot, you're a member of Class 22 Coffin Fellows. I'm wearing probably my favorite hat that I had that I own, which is my Class 22 hat today. And in thinking about you and Class 22, tell us about what your journey through Coffin Fellows has meant to you in your life and your career.
Yeah, so you know, this funny thing also happens in your venture career. If you fall in love with it and you spend 10 plus years in it, where you amass these friends who are venture investors, but all you really talk about with the overwhelming majority of them is deals. You know, can you get me into the next deal? What's good in your portfolio? Which CEO should I be talking to? Coffman is really, really unique. I remember my first experience or my first module where I was doing the pre-work and I said, man, none of this has to do with investing. And I looked at my then fiance, now wife, and I said, man, you know, I'm going to spend like the next 3 or 4 hours on a weekend, like thinking about myself, not as an investor, but like who I am as a person. And I was probably a little frustrated by it, given all the things I had going on at the time. But looking back on it, it's allowed me to connect not only with myself as an investor, but with this incredible group of folks in Class 22 and beyond in a very different way. And as someone who, you know, cares a lot about values and the things that matter, there's a number of folks in my class that I now consider like very, very close friends. One of the greatest joys out of my class has been getting to know Jacob Mullins, who's now starting a Latino VC thing, kind of in the mirror image of Black VC. I mean, that's, I can't even really put a measurement on the value and the joy I get from that. But whether it's traveling with them internationally, asking really kind of scary, pseudo dumb questions to them that I know they'll answer in a very honest way. Coffman has been super transformational in my career, particularly for someone who'd been doing venture for a long time. I'll end the answer to this question. Going back to that first session again, I've been primarily doing enterprise investing my entire career. And during my first module, I left my car charger in my car, and I had to step out after hearing Jason Green speak about his view on enterprise investing and building emergence and his last kind of 30 investments. And I stopped in my tracks on my way to my car, and this voice in my head said, I think you've been doing this wrong the entire time. And that's like a moment that I've shared with my friends in Coffman and even some friends outside. And you know, having someone like Jason, who has been there from the beginning of Coffman, has built a fund really around Coffman and the values that are there, talk openly about how to mix his values, which we've talked about is very similar in my career, with his investment lens on enterprise investing. I mean, where else am I going to get that? And that's something that I've taken into my last 2 years of investing. That's just made me a better investor and a smarter investor. And I'm really happy to have had that experience through Coffman.
That's awesome, Elliot. All right, we're going to go into a lightning round. Three short answer questions for you. The first one is, you've talked about some of your failed investments openly. One of them was Clear, and you talked about how it reminded you to be humble and have humility in this business of VC. What would you say about having humility in VC in a short answer?
Yeah, I think particularly for new people or younger people in the venture business, it's the one way that you'll keep yourself sane. You're going to have a lot of failures in this venture thing where, you know, the investment thesis by which you wired that money day one is totally thrown out of the window basically by day two. And that first board meeting you go to, you find out everything that you didn't see in diligence or helped you drive to that decision, then you got to figure it out. But staying humble will keep you very even and measured in how you work with companies and how you make those tough decisions. So it's certainly something that I impress upon basically everyone I come across in venture, particularly earlier in their career.
And this might be the same answer then, but what's one message you would give to young rising star underrepresented minority VCs?
Oh man, it is a windy road for us. As you know, I've Bessemer marks my fourth fund. It's not necessarily the way I would map out my own career if I could have done it. But there's a lot of kind of glass ceilings and hidden obstacles and walls that I think you face as a diverse our minority venture investor. And man, you just got to keep grinding. You got to keep going. Luckily, I think it's getting a little bit better. And then the last thing I would say is leverage those that have been in the industry a little longer and have kind of faced some of those challenges and obstacles, and hopefully we can help you avoid them.
Awesome. Last question. Coffin Fellows Summits, can't miss or can't make?
Well, one of the best kind of career experiences I've had was going to Israel with the Kaufman class and the broader Kaufman Fellows family. Unfortunately, I missed the last one in Japan because it was my second week here at Bessemer. But from all the pictures and stories and videos I've seen, I'm pretty sure I can keep the can't miss answer pretty solid.
Elliot, you are an amazing human being, an amazing investor, an amazing friend. And I feel like I am hugely blessed to have you in my life and to see you as an inspiration to me and to others around you. Thank you so much for joining us in the arena.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the Arena Podcast. As always, you can get notified of the latest release by subscribing to our newsletter found in the description of this episode or by visiting fellows.org. That's all for now. We'll catch you in the arena next week.